Farhad, host of the People Speak radio show, here where we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. Today, the people speak with a woman that is making a difference. Betsy Myers, the COO of the Obama for America campaign and the chair of Women for Obama. Ms. Myers was the executive director for the Center of Public Leadership at Harvard University. Prior to that, she was the director of the alumni programs and external relations at the Kennedy School. Ms. Myers also was a senior official in the Clinton administration. She served for 2 years in the U.S. Small Business Administration as Associate Deputy Administrator for Entrepreneurial Development and was responsible for the agency's Technical Assistance Management and Distant Learning Program. There's a lot more we could talk about, Betsy, about you. You're a very fascinating woman, as it seems. Welcome to our show. It's a pleasure and an honor having you here tonight.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on, Basma.
Oh, it's great. Betsy is chair for the Women of Obama. What is the role of women in this campaign, and why segregate the issue of feminism as a sole entity by saying Women for Obama as opposed to, say, Citizens for Obama? Is there an advantage or a disadvantage to that?
Well, you know, actually, I think what we did in Women for Obama is just another way that people can get involved in our campaign, and it's another entry point. And some women like to participate in a women-focused program, so it's just a way for women's voices to be heard, and make sure that we're addressing the policies and issues that matter to them in their lives. And, you know, lots of the issues that we deal with in this campaign, like Iraq and health care, are top of the list for women. In fact, the number one issue that women care about when polled across the country is Iraq and getting out of Iraq. So it's not necessarily that the issues are, you know, segregated anymore, but it's just an opportunity for women to come together and community meetings across the country, and particularly in our early states, to gather to talk about Barack Obama and the presidential candidates, and just to make sure that women are at the table and their voices are heard.
Well, obviously, that's an incredible process, and you're right. I believe that this issue of women in war has always been, you know, very prevalent in all of the wars campaigns or peace activist campaigns. There was an all-day Women for Obama training session recently, and I'm sure this is not the first one that you guys have held. What do you offer in the way of training at these events? How does one train activism and this type of thinking process?
Well, you know, it's really exciting. I mean, our campaign is so grassroots. I mean, what's amazing, I think, about the Obama campaign is that the amount of people that are involved in this campaign that have of all age groups, and then also just many, many people who've never, ever been active before in politics. So we created a program called Camp Obama, which we ran out of Chicago every week this summer, where people of all ages could come together for it. We did it for 4 days, and then we had some two-day Camp Obamas as well, where people could come together and not only learn about our campaign, but what Barack thinks and feels about the various issues, but also about how to organize, how to canvass, meaning knocking on doors, phoning, and then being able to speak why people have decided to join this campaign, their story, understanding our message and being able to talk the message through their personal story. So they just, you know, really walked out of the Camp Obamas and the trainings with a better understanding of our campaign and who Barack is and what he stands for, and then how to share with others the message of our campaign. So we've had some of these trainings in Iowa and New Hampshire. We're doing in all of the trainings, we have a piece of it that's devoted to women. We've had some of the trainings that are devoted totally to women. I participated in one in Iowa this past weekend. And what's so incredible about these trainings is that there's women that come that are, you know, as young as, well, we had one young woman in Iowa this weekend who was 11. And we've other young girls, 14, all the way to women in their 80s. So it's just really touching to meet this kind of diverse group of women who've come together to with the message of hope. I mean, what we see from the women that are and men that come together in our campaign is that they're just inspired by Barack's message of change and hope. And I just am so touched all the time by how many people have never been active in the political campaign ever in their life, or they haven't been involved in a very long time.
I think that's something that I found to be very interesting as a longtime activist myself. Next year I will be holding a symposium at a major convention here in the Michigan area, a political symposium, and part of the process is going to be the training of activism, as you said, the many areas of campaigning, showing your presence. And one thing that we're finding is that we're finding an incredible resurgence of people that are interested in politics. Is that something that you're seeing in this campaign that has been different in previous campaigns?
Well, I think there is an amazing grassroots. I mean, we have in our campaign the most amount of grassroots support of any candidate. You know, 350,000 people have given money over the internet and in other fundraisers to Barack, as an example. Everywhere he goes, you know, we just had a rally in New York a week or two ago. 24,000 people showed up. We just had an event in Madison, Wisconsin yesterday. 4,000 people showed up. It's absolutely amazing that wherever he goes, you're just seeing this incredible, I think, desire to be part of the process, which is what Barack's campaign is all about, by the way. I mean, he wants a campaign where people are included, where people can participate. That's why we created programs like Camp Obama, so that nobody would be turned away in our campaign who wanted to participate, because there's only so many jobs in a national campaign, and then there's only so many volunteer jobs and so many internships. So how do we harness all this energy of people that want to get involved and devote their time? So we've had these kind of Camp Obamas. But yes, I mean, I think it's just been an amazing aspect of this campaign. And truly, you know, Barack wasn't really planning to run for president at this point. He'd just been in the Senate 2 years, and he'd written his book. What was amazing about his book, and as he went out across the country on his book tour, was the crowds that showed up to his book parties and book signings. And it was almost like, I've talked to him about this, where it's almost like the grassroots rose to meet him, where a lot of people decide, I'm going to run for office, I'm going to run for president, and then they go about putting their candidacy together, and then their grassroots organizations. It's almost like with Barack, the grassroots rose to meet him, and it was like he grabbed the ring, as you might say, and, you know, jumped in this race. And it's just, I think that is what is special about this campaign, is that because we are so grassroots and we are touching so many different people across this country.
Well, I agree that it is definitely a fascinating experience that we're having. You know, you were talking about the fundraising. The third quarter of the fundraising has just been turned in, and Senator Obama broke records in raising funds. He's raised over $80 million for campaign funding. Now, a lot of people have a lot of issues with this. Let me ask you, do you know where he ranks in his effort in comparison to some of the other candidates on the trail?
I mean, his ranking as far as the most amount of money raised,
the amount
you mean?
Of monies that have been garnished?
Well, right. We have raised the most amount of money than any candidate of either party.
Oh, really? Oh, wonderful.
And we outraised Mrs. Clinton's campaign in the first two quarters, and in the last quarter she was $3 million ahead of us. But nobody comes close to us in our grassroots, because our average donation is under $100.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, is are these independent donations from the people and the constituency, or are these corporate donations?
They're individual donations. So with campaign finance laws, people have to give individually to the campaign. And what's special about Barack is that he doesn't take any federal lobbyist money or PAC money. And so he's been able to raise this kind of dollars without going to the special interests, which is what was one of the cornerstones of our campaign, is that we are not going to take special interest money, so he won't be beholden to them when he becomes president of the United States. So it's just incredible. I always say that when you think about that, people that have never given money before take the time to take their credit card, go onto the internet, go onto our website and contribute, or to go to an event and our small dollar events that are $25. People take the time and energy and effort to participate and contribute. It just says a lot about Barack and what he's inspiring, the message that's resonating out there in the country for him. It is incredible the amount of dollars that you have to raise to run for president, and it's just amazing what it takes now. And to compare it to where we come in 15 years, in 1991, Bill Clinton only raised $3 million and didn't put his staff together till fall of 91. So that'd be like comparatively now we'd be putting our team together. Barack started putting his team together a year ago now, and we're going to have raised close to $100 million by the time we get through the primaries, where Bill Clinton raised three. So it's just incredible where we've come to, in campaigns and primary campaigns in this country.
Well, I think that's fantastic that he's been able to raise that. And let me ask you something, Betsy. When it comes to the donation dollars for campaign funding, there are some rules and regulations that one must adhere to if you're taking public funding. Does the grassroots money fall under public funding?
You know what? That's a great question. I'm not public funding.
I'm trying to figure out myself what exactly is public funding. I mean, I know we have corporate entities. Obviously, the PACs would not fall under that. But
right.
Do grassroots constituent funds fall under public funding, and we're the public after all?
Right, exactly. I'm not really sure how that exactly works, and I should actually know that. But the problem with public funding, there's a cap on it. And what's happened now in our campaigns is that the candidates realize that they can raise more money than they'd be able to get through the public financing, and mm-hmm. so that the bar has been risen has risen so high now that the candidates feel that they are better off, going outside the public funding amount. And be able to raise their own dollars. So it just makes the stakes even higher. And it just seems like at some point we've got to find a better way to do this.
Well, I found it interesting that Mitt Romney had funded
having to raise $100 million for president.
I was saying I found it humorous that Mitt Romney had funded most of his own campaign.
Right, he has. He's put a lot of his own money into his campaign. And yes, I mean, that's the, when wealthy people that run for office have the ability to do that. And someone like Barack, who doesn't come from wealth at all, and as, he and Michelle, came up in very lower middle class families where their parents, were just getting by. It's a whole different, for him, it's a very different. And it's just amazing when you look at how our campaign is the number of people that have contributed and the low dollar amounts. And we take that money very seriously in this campaign. We are, as chief operating officer, Barack challenged us from day one that the dollars that we took into this campaign, that our donors are our customers, and that every dollar we raise, we protect, make sure that we spend the money that we spend here, we do it with, we're buttoned up. We really run this campaign like a business, so that our bills are paid on time. We challenge every vendor that we work with to give us the best price possible. We have very strict rules in our campaign across our staff about travel, how we spend our money. We are just very, very, very tight to make sure that we don't waste any of the taxpayers and our donors' money.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that. Let me ask you this. Is America ready for a black president?
Oh, boy, I hope so. I think that he is the future of a Barack Obama type of candidate. It's just so exciting when you see both a woman and a African American, you know, actually, you know, running. It's serious. The two top candidates in the Democratic primary are a woman and African American. I just think it's very, very exciting, and it's the future of our country. And I think it would say a lot to the world to have an African American president, and someone who comes from this new generation, someone who's had experience living abroad as a child. I just think he this country is a melting pot. I think people sometimes we forget that the country is made up of so many different. You know, such a diverse country we live in, and people coming from all different nations and colors and religions. And so, you know, I hope we are ready for an African-American president. I hope that people, when they really go into the voting booth, will actually, you know, be comfortable to pull the trigger. I think there's always going to be patches of people that, you know, we're still not willing to consider voting for a person of color or a woman, but I think we're making progress. And I just think it would be just hugely, hugely historic and exciting to have the first African-American president of the United States.
Well, I certainly agree with you. I certainly would hope that the United States of America is ready for that. If we're not ready now, I don't know that we will ever be ready, I guess. I heard some news today, Betsy, and I have to tell you, I consider this no more than pure, unadulterated mudslinging in the worst way. According to Dick Cheney's wife, Lynn Cheney, Barack and Dick Cheney are eighth cousins. Now, how sad is that? Dick Cheney...
Say that again, they're what?
That they are eighth cousins. It's just been announced, and I got this off via the internet and all my great friends. And I'm laughing because here, Dick Cheney, the anti-transparency vice president of the USA, is cousin to the man who says he wants transparency in our government. And I thought that was just, I couldn't resist bringing that up to you.
How did she find that out?
I'm telling you, I have incredible friends and an incredible community in the internet, and it's all over the internet right now.
Wow, I missed that.
And
today,
according to all sources, they have tracked it down. And in fact, Dick Cheney and Barack Obama are eighth cousins. Some say 16th cousins, but Lynn Cheney is an advocate of eighth cousins
oh my
right
God.
Now.
Very interesting.
Absolutely. You're going to have to let Barack know about this.
Yeah, no, I don't know if he's heard that yet.
I thought, well, okay, this is breaking news here.
Wow.
Let me ask you, Hillary Clinton has recently been saying things that Senator Obama has been saying all along, things like opening dialogue between Iran and America. How do you feel, and how do you think Barack feels about this, what many consider to be a major flip-flop on the part of Hillary Clinton?
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, Barack is just, one thing that's so fabulous with working for Barack Obama is he's just his authentic self, and he is who he is. And so it's just refreshing to work for someone who doesn't have to, you know, change around for polling or what is politically expedient. And, you know, he all along, it's his nature to bring people together. So all the things that he said about, you know, bringing countries, you know, to the table to have a conversation is exactly just how he's been in his life. And there's so many examples of that when he was a state senator and a United States senator where, you know, he was able to bring very disparate sides who didn't agree on a very variety of topics to the table to kind of come to some common ground. So it's just who he is. It's just who it's his leadership style, which is, I think, what makes him so unique. And I think it's resonating with people. And it's really what, I mean, Americans are so, in my work at the Harvard Center for Public Leadership, we did a partnership with U.S. News and World Report. And I think it's the third year where the center's doing it. But it basically does a study on Americans' thoughts about their leaders. And there's been a 20-year decline of how Americans feel about their leaders. And on the very bottom of that study is the press, and the second is the executive branch. And I just think it's like, you know, Americans really are tired of just bad leadership. And, you know, what we've seen from the current administration is if you don't talk to people, if you keep it insular and you very few people at the table and, you know, no listening and no voices, you know, you get what exactly has happened in our country over the last 8 years. And I think that's what Barack brings. And I think other candidates would be looking at that and seeing that resonates. And so it's not surprising that any candidate would try to start to copy the basis of what Barack Obama is, because it's just amazing what kind of in the last 10 months just the people that across this country who he's resonating with. And he brings such interesting leadership qualities to the table, which are just, I think, what we need for the future.
The presidency of the 208 campaign is about Iraq. I don't think anybody in this country can be fooled to be thinking anything differently at this point. You said it yourself that a majority of the women that are involved in the Obama campaign and across the country, their one major concern and their greatest concern is the issue of Iraq. How does Senator Obama hope to redeem the lost faith in the Democratic Party over the issue of Iraq? I mean, after all, we were told that we were going to be getting out. And this shuffle of 30,000 troops back and forth like pawns on a playing field certainly didn't do anything to increase the dreams of democracy and leaving Iraq. How is he going to do that?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, the amazing thing about Barack Obama is, you know, as you know, he opposed the war in Iraq from the very beginning. And we just, you know, celebrated the 5-year anniversary of him standing up in Chicago as a state senator saying, you know, against this war. And so that being said, I mean, Barack will, as president, will have a plan to end the war responsibly. And his goal is to, he would immediately begin deploying American troops. And, you know, he believes that the withdrawal would have to be strategic and phased, and obviously directed by our military commanders on the ground and done in consultation with the Iraqi government. And, you know, it's complicated, as he and others have talked about, and that you'd have to we would begin immediately to bring, one or two combat brigades home each month, and that also you have to, as he said before, that you have to be responsible about what you would, you know, leave in the region to make sure that you didn't leave a dangerous place. So
well, I think what scares a lot of people the most is this year alone, Congress has voted over 40 times on Iraq, yet nothing has changed, even under a Democratic House majority. So I think that people's concerns are genuine. Is Senator Obama willing to take the risk? Is he willing to come out actively against this issue?
I think he is. I mean, I think he's over and over again stated his strong, support for pulling troops out of Iraq. And yes, absolutely. I mean, this is why I think, you know, well, the Iraq War is what happened in the 06 congressional races, which turned the House to Democratic. And, it is just Americans want us to get out. It's overwhelmingly supportive. And aside from the Americans wanting the troops to come home, Barack has always disagreed with this war, always thought that it was, the wrong thing to do, and that we would, you know, if we got in there, we would be stuck in a very expensive and dangerous war, which is exactly what's happened.
Oh, exactly. And
I mean, I also think, though, that he also has talked about how he would also support, a way to the humanitarian disaster in Iraq to try to help that going forward. Because you would leave a country in pretty bad shape. And so he's, obviously very aware of that, too.
Let me ask you something here, Betsy. On the issue of immigration, obviously, again, the security of our borders has been one of the prime issues surrounding any of the campaign candidates. Senator Obama strongly supports the DREAM Act. And many feel the DREAM Act actually rewards undocumented aliens with the promise of And that's why they call it the Dream Act, the promise of the dream of becoming American citizens. How do you think that he's going to respond to accusations such as that?
You know what, that's one issue that I have to actually confess that I really don't. I can't answer that.
Mm-hmm.
That's on that question.
Which is
question.
Fair enough. I understand that. I mean,
yeah.
It is a big issue, and but it is important, and I think that a lot of people are concerned about that. They're concerned about how it's going to be handled, and I would seriously think that that he would need to look at this deeply.
No, he has been very involved in
yeah.
it, and but I just am not qualified as on all of the policy issues as a COO. And that's just one that that's a question I just can't answer.
That's fine. It's, and fair enough. Mark Blumenthal of Pollster.com, which site tracks and analyzes polling data from across the country, said, just about every campaign except for Clinton's knows it has to win in Iowa or New Hampshire, or at least finish ahead of Senator Clinton to have a realistic shot. May I ask you, is that why Barack withdrew from Michigan?
No, actually, the reason he withdrew from Michigan was that our campaign is has a commitment with the Democratic National Committee to follow the party rules, and the party rules were that the date was set for February 9th, the caucus, and when the date got moved up, we had to, in accordance with what we had committed, was we had to take our names off the ballot. And we're hoping that the Democrats in Michigan will help us by restoring the date to the original commitment. So that had nothing to do with the work that we're doing in Iowa and New Hampshire.
Well, thank you. We have an audience question for you. This is from Nelson from New York, from our virtual auditorium. Why didn't Obama vote 2 weeks ago on the Lieberman bill declaring the Iranian Guards a terrorist organization?
Why was he not there?
Why did he not vote?
Right. There was enough senators, I guess, that his vote wasn't going to make a difference, and he had a prior engagement. And that's one of the difficulties, I think, around campaigns is when a sitting senator's trying to balance their life between Senate and running for office. And so he had a prior commitment, and he knew that his vote was not going to make a difference and that it had already been decided.
Well, it kind of is interesting. It goes right back to the 40 votes this year about Iraq, and nothing has changed there either.
Yeah.
It's kind of frightening, actually. We have a caller on line 3, Steve from Santa Fe. Steve, do you have a question for Betsy?
Yes, Bob Bossaman, thank you. Betsy, you know, I'm a veteran. I'm concerned, of course, about veterans' issues and health care issues. One of the big issues, though, that I think that concerns me the most is what are we going to do about Israel and the whole Mideast fiasco that's being caused by this? That's my most concern about the Senator. Thank you.
Thank you. He's very concerned about it too, and it's something in a region of the world that he would, again, I think with Barack's leadership skills of diplomacy and bringing people to the table and listening and judgment and courage, I think that Barack would absolutely try to make a difference in that region of the world where a lot of our past leaders haven't had as much I think, success in that region. I think Barack would bring some interesting leadership skills to try to make a difference there.
Well, let me ask you this. The Jewish lobby, APEC, has a stronghold on American politics. There isn't anybody that doesn't understand that. And the issue of Palestine-Israel is of utmost importance as far as I'm concerned, or many people in the world are concerned, to the restabilization of the Middle East. How does Senator Obama propose to secure a peace between Palestine and Israel? And is he afraid of the Israeli lobby?
Oh, I don't think he's afraid of the Israeli lobby at all. I mean, again, you know, Barack is one to continue the conversation and bring people together. And, you know, I can't answer exactly how he would go about this, but I think it's something that would be of utmost importance on his agenda. And the other thing about Barack is that he will bring the true experts on every issue to his White House and to his administration. I think that is something that he's very comfortable and committed to, that he doesn't think he has all the answers to these incredibly critical problems of our nation and our world, and that he would bring some of the top experts to the table to help him work through some of these problems and see if there could be some breakthroughs.
Elizabeth from Miami is on line three. Elizabeth, your question for Betsy, please.
Yes, my question is this. As a baby boomer, I'm aware that the prescription care for Medicare has a $2,400 maximum amount, but it includes not the amount allowed is not only the amount that is paid, but it is paid by both the senior and the government, which in some cases can be really, really a very small amount on the part of the government. In my way of looking at this, I feel as though that this is a very sinister, evil program that the government has locked our most vulnerable citizenry into because they cannot opt to purchase other health insurance prescription care to cover this to cover them. And I think that this is something that Senator Obama should look into and help out the seniors of this country.
Thank you so much. I mean, I think that we know that the spending on drugs has quadrupled over the last decade, and it costs something like almost $200 billion per year. And a couple of things that he wants to do is clear the obstacles to so that we can use have greater use of generic drugs, which lowers the cost. And secondly, he believes that we should allow prescription drug importation from countries such as Canada. And third, his health care plan allows the federal government to negotiate for lower drug prices in the Medicare program, just as it's done, as it's negotiated lower prices for our veterans and troops. So I think that he feels that the government can use its market muscle to lower prices for seniors. And his hope is that we could save, the numbers show basically that we could save up to $157 billion over the next 10 years, which would make a difference.
Thank you, Betsy. We have a question from Sue from Massachusetts. How willing is Barack to parlay with Iran?
You know what? I don't feel like I can answer that. I think that he again is willing to he wants to find solutions to some of these big problems, and with his leadership, he'll continue to do that. But I can't answer that.
Well, you know, and I in all fairness to Senator Obama, one of the things that Hillary Clinton has been accused of is mimicking Barack Obama in the fact that he wants to have a dialogue between Iran and America. So that's a good thing. I mean, after all, where have we got to go? Either we are going to dialogue or we are going to war. And
well,
if we don't go to war, we keep dialoguing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the bottom line with all of these tough questions is at the end of the day, Barack is all about having a dialogue. And that, you know, you never get anywhere when you shut the door on people, and if there's no conversation, it's like in any relationship in your life, when there's no conversation and you just refuse to talk and try to come with some kind of solution, where does it ever get you? So that's his fundamental belief, is that you get a lot more done if you're willing to come to the table and have dialogue and continue the conversation, even when you don't totally agree.
Well, Betsy, you know, the area of transparency has been very important to the Obama campaign, holding public officials accountable, fighting corruption,
government meetings open to the press and to the public, budgets and financial statements that can be reviewed by anybody. But that's not what happened here. In our country, in our government and the administration over the last two terms, have actually defied every one of those statements. In fact, it's been called one of the most secretive administrations in the history of the United States. The Patriots Act, the issue of warrantless wiretapping, loss of habeas corpus, the slipping of legal recruiting into our school systems by the No Left Child Left Behind Act. It's obvious to me, and I think to a lot of Americans, that the administration accomplished what it set out to accomplish. How can Senator Obama or any president worth his salt change what damage has already been done to our Constitution and to our country?
That's a good question. I mean, it's a big job for any one of these candidates that is trying to be the president of the United States. It's just an amazing mess that we have to that the next leader of the of our country has to step into. And it's mind-boggling, actually, the debt we're in, the war in Iraq, all the things you just mentioned. And so I actually admire every one of these candidates who has the guts to want to take on these big challenges. And so, you know, I think this is the crux of what Barack is trying to do is to try to run a different kind of government, to try to bring change to Washington in ways that has never been seen before, to try to, you know, work across the aisles. And he's just dedicated and devoted to doing to leading in a different way, to and he believes that that we should give the government back to the people, so that there's an honest that he always says, I will, what you can always count on me for is you will get honest, you will get the honest truth, you will get feedback, you will get, you know, the truth about what's really happening. And so I think to have a leader that's committed to that will then bring in people in his administration that will also be committed to that, to try to, you know, work hard for the American people. And that's the basis of what, who Barack is and what kind of campaign he is running and what kind of government he would oversee.
Well, I tell you, whoever is going to be the president certainly has their work cut out for him. This is what the transparency of the past two administrations have been, this a stealth covering up of issues, this suppression of media blackouts, things of that sort. I think it's a frightening consideration to think what they are hiding can possibly be worse than that.
I think it's interesting when you have, it's an example of a very small group of people around the president, and so, you know, where there's just not a, you know, opportunity for new information to be in, you know, or new information isn't listened to or dealt with. And so I think that's what, you know, is hugely scary about this current administration. And so with the Obama administration, I think you would have such a different way of thinking, where many voices would be allowed at the table and would be welcomed. I think that is what is exciting about this candidacy and about this potential new president, is that we have to do it differently. And the way to do it differently is to let the American people participate in their government. Of the taxes that we pay, it's just the way it should be. It should never be, for Americans, it's just not fair that they should have to put up with what we currently have been putting up with for the last 8 years. And
I'm more astounded with the fact that we actually have put up with it.
I know. Well, and then, you know, the American population reelected him, which is, also just amazing. So, but we are where we are, and, you know, I think that's what, you know, Barack is stepping into this opportunity that came to him by the people wanting him to run, and with, you know, hope and inspiration that it can be done differently, that we, you know, and he's going to have a lot of work cut out for him in the first several years to try to get back on track, not only in our own country, but with relationships all over the world, where we're like the lowest point we've been on kind of how other nations and people feel about us. And so there's going to be a lot of work that's going to be cut out for us to start rebuilding those relationships. And there's no one better than Barack Obama to be able to build those relationships and understand, you know, other countries and other cultures, and start to build those relationships again to change how other countries feel about us.
Well, I'll be honest with you. In most cases, the old saying was that whoever goes becomes president of this country has some big shoes to fill. In this case, I believe that they have a big hole to fill, a big gap in security, a big gap in the Constitution, a big gap in the suppression of rights of the American people. So, whoever is going to become president, it certainly has a lot of work to do. And you're right. It takes a very brave community of people that even would think about or attempt to do this kind of work that they're doing. Angie from Houston asks, what does Obama plan to do for the African-American community in terms of changing the affirmative action laws, health issues, and poverty?
That's a great question. I mean, I think, you know, he is just very excited to, number one, make sure that African-American population has a seat at the table. And that's the first thing, and start to address some of these issues of poverty and affirmative action and equality for all. And, you know, nobody understands the average American and kind of the issues of our country like Barack Obama does. And, you know, issues that face our country. Like, I'm just amazed, like, how many children still in this country go to bed hungry every night. It's like 10 million children go to bed hungry every night, and how many people are living in poverty in this country. And Michelle and Barack talk about this all the time as they're out campaigning, about just how so many Americans are barely getting by or living, you know, at or below the poverty level, and that they're committed with all of their heart to making sure that all populations are at the table, and that we address, you know, the people that have that are struggling in our country. The government's supposed to be helpful to you and your partner as you're trying to struggle through some of the issues of life. And so, I think African Americans would have a seat at the table. And also, Barack is so committed to having a diverse group of people in his administration, just as we have in our campaign. And so, there would be many African Americans, that increased African Americans, that would be part of his administration, his White House's agencies, to make sure that the issues are of every diverse group are represented. So I think it's very exciting for the African American population, and then also just the fact that Barack is African American and Michelle is African American, and what they bring to the table from that, being, you know, part of that community and understanding the issues that go along with that as well.
Thank you. Gail from the United States is on line 3. Betsy, Gail, your question for Betsy Meyer.
Yeah, good evening, ladies. I think it's very exciting that at this time in our history of humanity, particularly for the United States, is that not only do we have a woman running for president, even though it's an ex-president's wife, but we also have a Afro-American, too. But I would like to draw some attention, and I'm not speaking from a conspiracy theorist aspect. I am part of what they call the royal family. I am a Dole. And I found really interesting when Barack finally threw his, shall we say, hat into the ring here about 6 or 7 months ago, that there was a short little blurb on the talking head news media. I forget whether it was Fox or CNN, one of those. But they talked about that Barack his lineage could be traced back to George Washington. There are white ancestry in his background. And pretty much every president for the last 30 presidents, I'm sure I'm off a little there on that, but it goes back to the bloodlines, back to the throne of England. And you cannot even be... you can't even run as one of the head, whether you're head for Republicans or for Democrats. It depends on the bloodlines, because my uncle, Bob Dole, ran against Clinton back in the early 90s.
Right.
And our family is related to the Queen of England. We are cousins to the Bushes, to the Clintons, and everyone else. And then I found it really interesting that the other day when Al Gore won that Nobel Peace Prize,
mm-hmm.
and they were talking on CNN that morning about the gene pool. That was the exact quote that they used, that if he ran against Hillary, that would really be dipping into the gene pool. Well, for most people out here, the layperson who thinks that their vote counts for presidency, we all really need to wake up to this. I come from that bloodline, so I do know what I'm talking about. And Barack, I think he's a wonderful person, but he'll never see his way to actually being voted for the candidate for the Democratic Party, although he can run as vice president if Hillary invites him on. But even then, he still has his lineage traces back to George Washington. Could you please respond to that? Thank you. I'll take that answer off air.
You know what? I don't think there's really any proof for sure that is the case. And so I don't really even know how to respond to that. I just appreciate your thoughts, and but I really can't respond any further on that.
Well, thank you, Gail, for calling. And speaking of Al Gore, his recent win of the Nobel Prize has brought an even brighter light on global warming. Betsy, how committed is Senator Obama to healing our environmental issues in the United States?
Oh, extremely. I think I'm so proud of Al Gore, just to start off. I had the privilege to work with him. I worked at the Clinton White House. I ran the Office for Women in 95 to 97, and so I spent quite a bit of time with the vice president. And so it's just a huge, I think, wonderful prize for him, and that he's done an amazing amount of work in the last couple of years. There's been a shift, I think, in people's awareness, and I know there's been a group of people that have been fighting this for a long time, but it just seems like it's gotten on the consciousness of the American public in a new way, and that Al Gore's had a lot to do with that in the last couple of years. So it's just incredible that he is leading this charge, and I was so proud of him when he got the Nobel Peace Prize this past week. But for Barack, he's absolutely committed to working on the environment, and it's top on his agenda, and he will again. I think he has said he will bring in experts to work on this, and I don't know who he would choose yet to be Secretary of the Environment, but I think it'll be someone of notoriety, and I wouldn't be surprised if Al Gore hopefully would work very closely with Barack in the White House to make sure that we were going in the right direction, and I know for sure that it would be top on his agenda.
Do you think Al Gore's going to throw his hat in?
You know, I don't. I don't, because I think that Al Gore has come to this place of worldwide recognition for the issue that he cares so deeply about, and I don't have any facts on this. It's just my own gut feeling that at this point in his life, that he's, I think, the door closed on this, and I think he's moved on to almost a bigger world stage on an issue that he can concentrate on and feels passionate about, and that he's made so much progress on it that I think he will continue to work on this and work with all the, not only the new president of the United States, but other world leaders and activists and entertainers and academics and nonprofits across this world to make a difference on this issue. So that's my gut, that he won't, even though there's a movement in the country to get him on the ballots and to get him to run. I think it's been very flattering for him, but I think my gut is that he won't do anything with it.
Betsy, we've only got a couple more minutes, but I do want to ask you, many in Congress as well as the Senate feel impeachment of the current Bush-Cheney administration is in order, including myself, and I'm here raising my hand. How does Senator Obama stand on the issue of impeachment in this area?
You know, I think that the feeling is that, my gosh, those of us who lived through the Clinton impeachment time, that it just sucks so much time and energy off of other issues that need to be addressed, and I think Barack wouldn't go down that road. I think there's forget how many more months. I was reading that he has something like 400-something days left as the president, that just the time it takes to go down, you know, to engage the Congress in impeachment is so expensive and time-consuming that it's not something that I think Barack would recommend.
Well, as far as a lot of us are concerned, I, from my opinion, I would say that it was over 400 days, far too long.
Right.
As you can see, we have an incredible national audience, and we'd love to have either Barack or Michelle on at a later date.
Sure.
And we would hope that you can relay that message to us. We were thrilled to have you, Betsy. Our guest next week is going to be the godfather of fitness, Jack LaLanne. Jack LaLanne is going to be 93 years old this year, folks, and he's going to be on our show Tuesday, October 23rd, 2007, from 8:30 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Listen to us live on BBS Radio and in our virtual auditorium on Pal Talk. Thank you very much. And it was an honor and a pleasure having you here, Betsy. Good luck with the campaign.
Thank you so much. I really
appreciate it. We're going to catch up with you during all of this. You know that, don't you?
Good. I hope so. And if people are interested, they can go on our website at www.barackobama.com.
Well, we have that up on our site, and you can go to thepeoplespeakradio.org. And find all the information on the work and the campaign work that Betsy Meyer is doing with Barack Obama. Thank you all very much, and have a wonderful evening. It's over when it's over, folks.
Bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of fast, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering. This land was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land was made for you and me. Thank you.